You're listening to The Osiris Munir Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey, my luminaries, my looms, my lights, my love out there shining brightly in a world of darkness, chaos, and mischievousness, I would say. How is everybody today? How are you getting through the week? Before we start it off, let me announce our sponsor, Kevin Pike, Senior Real Estate and Probate Specialist at Coldwell Banker, 818-571-1508. He will take care of all your real estate needs. He's a bright, bubbly little chap, so he's lots of fun. So don't forget to call him, 818-571-1508. Shout out to all of those who choose love over chaos. I'm with you on that one. We have enough junk going on. We all need to take a break, smile, and give some people some hugs and kindness. Today, drum roll, I have been waiting to talk to this man forever. He is probably one of my favorites in the world that I'm about to discuss. He comes from a long history of news reporting and broadcasting. His memoir, An Accidental Career, My 58-Year Adventure as a Broadcast News Reporter, is a real boots from the ground up Texas cowboy story. For over 40 years, he has given us eyes and ears in Los Angeles. He's covered breaking news stories, celebrities, all kinds of things of interest that have left us with our mouths open and given our community a voice that has been able to be heard worldwide. Please welcome to our set and to the Osiris Munir Show, Mr. Emmy Award-winning reporter Hal Eisner. Mr. Eisner, how are you?
I'm well. If I were any better, I wouldn't know what to do with myself.
Well, you look great. You look very dapper.
Thank you.
And I love the green, and the whole look today is perfect for what we're going to talk about. First of all, before I forget, you had a book signing at Broman's last night in Pasadena.
Right.
I was told by your rep and by yourself that the lines were wrapped around. What was the book signing like? Who came? What were some of the questions you were asked?
Well, first of all, my career was accidental, so I never thought I was going to be a broadcast journalist. I thought I was going to be a lawyer. I never then thought I was going to become an author, but I did that. Then I never thought I was going to have a book signing. It was standing room only. So I keep busting these barriers that I seem to think that I can't jump over. Mm-hmm. And surprise, these things keep happening, and I'm so thrilled. And I was really overwhelmed last night to really see this crowd of people in Vroman's bookstore. And there were even people there that I used to work with years ago that came out to support me, and I had no idea they were even coming.
Oh,
so it was a wonderful evening. It was, you know, delightful. The questions ranged from everything from, you know, why did you write the book, to, you know, what's your feeling about the so-called fake news, and how do you help future broadcasters? There was a whole range of things that people asked. I had a moderator, Ray Richmond, who interviewed me, and then also we had a portion of time where we took questions from the audience. And on my social media accounts, Hal Eisner, journalist on Facebook, and my Instagram, will be putting up the archive tape of that in the next day or so. And so people will be able to see that.
And the IG is what you said?
Instagram
said Facebook
is my name. Frankly, I'm on all social media. It's Hal Eisner.
Okay, good.
Except
so we can
for
find
Facebook.
You.
Facebook has a fan page, Hal Eisner Journalist.
Okay. Well, I want to be close to you, so I'm going to go where you are, okay?
There you go.
So anyway, I know that you spend quite a bit of time. Now, were you? I'm a Texan by birth. I'm a Southern Belle by birth. I'm from the South. But anyway, I know that you spent a lot of time in South Texas and Louisiana. In the news that you, let me rephrase it. Was the news that you presented in L.A., the same kind of news that found interest in those states as well?
Well, I mean, obviously the stories are different. The things that we talk about in any community are very similar. You know, I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, but when I was 13, my dad moved us to Dallas, Texas. So I really think of Dallas as being my home. And when I went off to college, I lived in Shreveport. I lived in Houston. I lived in Fort Worth. And this is where my radio career was. And then from radio, I ended up in television, and that brought me out here to Los Angeles.
Really? So you went through all of those things before you landed in as a news reporter.
So no, I was a news reporter all that time.
Oh, you were always doing a news reporting.
58 years, yes.
Oh, wow. So it is it's a 58-year span, history span, right?
Yeah, I mean, it started, if you're curious, it started, I was in the high school band. I played saxophone. And a local radio station in Dallas, KLIF, the Mighty 1190, had a contest. And the contest was, send in a postcard and tell us why you want to report the high school football score from your school on Friday nights. And I thought, that sounds like fun. And so I sent in a postcard. And either I was the only one from my school that sent in a postcard, or they actually pulled my name out of a box randomly, but I won. And that's why you and I are having this conversation, because otherwise I would be back in Texas probably dealing with the law.
Wow. So you've come along. Now, I read that you were in Texas. You had to be very young. And you experienced the JFK assassination. Right. And that was one of the events. Was that one of the events that inspired you to do news reporting or to continue reporting?
I actually started at the age of 16.
Okay.
So, you know, it was, we moved to Dallas at the age of 13.
13.
And when I was in junior high school, just after we moved there, that's when the assassination happened. And so that was very impactful. Was it the thing that got me in? No, it was the postcard that got me interested in broadcasting.
Okay. Okay.
But the assassination clearly was something that had an incredible impact on all of us who lived in Dallas. And it was, you know, it was just like the Robert Kennedy assassination in Los Angeles. It was very, very powerfully impactful.
Sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We all went in the bathroom and started crying. I remember I was in school and we all went in the bathroom and started crying.
Yeah.
We didn't even know why we were crying. We just knew that it whatever happened, everybody was sad and people were crying. Yeah. And you know, they closed the school for the day. They, you know, the people wanted to still go to class. So how did that make you feel? You were just a kid. So did you know who JFK, what were you up point on all of that?
Even yeah, as a because the I was born the last year of the Truman administration. So I don't remember Harry Truman as president. I remember him in the years after that. Mm-hmm. Eisenhower was the president I really started to get to know. And then when Kennedy came along, it was really a very interesting sort of dynamic. You had an older guy that to a young kid looks like grandpa. And then all of a sudden, here's this young guy that comes in with this young, beautiful wife. Mm-hmm. And it just changed night and day. So there was a lot of good feeling I had for them, not because of politics, because I've never really been a political type, but because it was youthful. They were youthful and they seemed to be very exciting. You know, they called that period of time Camelot. And mm-hmm. So when that happened, it was like, how could that possibly happen? How could that happen here in the city of Dallas? And, you know, just to give you a little more of a picture.
Please.
I was in science class when the principal got on the PA and said the president's been shot in the motorcade near downtown. And Mr. Hofrichter was the science teacher. And immediately you could see his head go into his hand like this when the news came across the PA. Mm-hmm. And the whole room suddenly felt like that. We were allowed to go to the auditorium to watch on a TV that was set up there. And as I was walking to the auditorium, there was a girl that was running down the hallway crying. Mm-hmm. And there was this really emotional impact that many of us felt. it was a little more dynamic in my own circle because, interestingly enough, the synagogue that my family went to, turns out that Jack Ruby, whose real family name was Rubenstein, mm-hmm. went to that synagogue.
No one.
And the man who shot the film of Kennedy being mortally wounded was Abraham Zapruder. He also went to that synagogue. The rabbi was Hillel Silverman, who ultimately came some years later to Beverly Hills to be over a temple there. Mm-hmm. And then on the 50th anniversary of the assassination, I found him down in La Jolla at an assisted living complex, took a camera crew, went down there and talked to him about what was it like to go to the jail every week to try to talk with Jack Ruby. What did he tell you? Why did he do it? And
what did he say? I mean,
Jack Ruby told him, and whether this is true or not is up for, you know, interpretation. But what the rabbi said was that Ruby said he did not want Jacqueline Kennedy to have to come back to Dallas for a trial. Now, wow. If that's accurate, I don't know. I always thought myself that it was somewhat of an emotional reaction. He was known around Dallas police circles. He had a club not far from there called the Carousel Club. Mm-hmm. And so he was known to officers. So when he got to the police station, he walked in. They knew who he was. I don't think they had any clue that he would have a gun in his pocket. But we all saw that play out on TV.
You know what I find interesting about the news, and I want to talk to you a little bit about it.
Yeah.
How do these people get into these places, and they've got security, and they've got cameras, and they've got, and they know people in the police department. And
You got to remember, though, that was 1963, right?
Something. 62. So they didn't have as much security.
Well, we have learned over the years. That's why now we have magnetometers at the airport. We didn't have it back then.
That's true.
So, I mean, as times change, we learn what we need to do to protect ourselves. Mm-hmm. So I think it was a different time, different security thinking. And, you know, he was known to the officers there. Probably went by there for coffee once in a while, you know.
Yeah.
I was in a car dealership the other day. A couple officers walked in to get coffee from the coffee machine at the car dealership. You know, sometimes that kind of thing happens. And I'm guessing, only guessing, because it's not a fact, that because he was known, he was able to walk up to where things were going on because people knew him by face.
Well, my thing is that it always seems like somebody that you know. They're around you when some mishap comes on. Like when you hear the news, is the woman's husband killed or the kid's parents, you know, or like the thing with the guy that recently lost his son shot him and the wife. I can think of his name right now. Reiner.
That was a stabbing, right?
Yeah, well, they're saying that he was kind of nutso in the head. So they're thinking it might be. But the thing is that it's usually someone around the person. When you dissect your news stories, how do you direct the reader to the intent and the truth of the story versus the embellishing of the story to get people to read it?
Watch it. Because it's not newspaper. It's TV. And it's just the facts, ma'am. Just the facts. You lay out the facts, you corroborate the information, you get two sources for every piece of information you're going to put out there. That's how you build your credibility. And if you do anything to damage your credibility and you lie or you tell a mistruth and you don't correct it, next stop is a courtroom and a judge, because you're probably going to be sued, because we live in a very litigious society. So if you get sued and you lose your case, you're going to lose your career. You're going to lose your job. And all that time that you spent working to build your credibility is down the drain. So you don't do that. Those that are in mainstream media, and I know virtually everybody in this town, I'm on the national board of SAG-AFTRA. I know people across the country. I'm on national committees. I don't know of anybody who would do that. But, you know, as far as the interpretation of, you know, a bias in news, I think That has to do with a blurring of what we see on cable television. We see the networks that cater to the left, to the right. It's not the Sean Hannitys or the Rachel Maddows or those people that are journalists. They're pundits. They're commentators. And so those on those networks that tell the news, they actually go out and they do the news. The others tell their opinion, which is entertainment or otherwise known as infotainment. So there's a big difference between that and the reality of what news is. And I think in the general public, the consensus is that it's all news. And it's really not if you're a purist.
Well, I mean, what makes it not all news? Why would you tell somebody to read?
Opinion. Oh, okay. Opinion. Somebody gives their opinion, and that's not news. It's a comment.
That's a comment.
And so if you want somebody that's going to give you the news, you watch a news person. If you want opinion and conversation and commentary about what's going on in the news, that's a different person. That's a commentator. That's somebody who opines. It's a pundit. And that's not what I did. That's not the area of news or broadcasting or conversation that I spent my career in. You know, I'm more of a mainstream journalist that, you know, would verify my information and do what I could to make sure it was accurate.
Yes, sir.
Because that's what we do. And I think it's unfortunate that, you know, we have the perceptions that we have. But you know what? A lot of times it's in the political realm where these perceptions get built. And it's not just the current administration. You can go back to George Washington and probably find an impact between the politics and the press. There are books written about the politicians and the press that go back many, many administrations. If you think about in your own life, we heard other presidents complaining about the stories that were covered, right? You know, if you go back to Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky, you know, if you can go to each one of these administrations and they've can find something that shined a spotlight on a place that wasn't kind, wasn't what you wanted for PR. But that's our job. We're you know, defenders of the First Amendment. And, you know, our job is to put the facts out there and keep things honest.
What is it about the news? Me personally, I am a gatherer of information. I love knowing stuff. I don't even have to talk to anybody. I just like knowing things from my own information, just so I can have access to information. What is it about the news and journalism that has kept you involved, that you didn't quit, you didn't become a singer or writer or something like that? And how did the news and your love of it lead you from Texas to L.A.?
That's a lot of stories, but let's start with being a singer. I'm not a singer. I can't carry a note. And even in the shower, if I sing, the water drops go the other way. So, you know, that's not my thing. It's about people. I love people. I really do.
Yeah.
And when you're in the news and you're out there with a camera and a microphone, you're dealing with people. You're dealing with people when it's a good day. You're dealing with people when it's a bad day. But you're dealing with people. And I've been known to be a bit of an empath. And I really connect with people. I feel it's what I call my schmoozability factor.
Uh-huh.
And I feel that, you know, it's a wonderful career. For one, variety, because you never know if you're going to be at a fire interviewing the mayor or following a pursuit. You never know if you're going to deal with this part of the community or that part of the community. You're going to meet people every day and never knew the day before. And sometimes you're going to have people, you know, in terrible situations trying to tell you their stories, and their stories are not always wonderful. They're not always great. They're not always something that you want to write home to mom about. Sometimes it's a mom crying on my shoulder because her kid just got shot in a drive-by. Mm-hmm. So I want to show you something here in the book. If you take a look at that.
Thank you.
Look at that little girl. The top
picture,
the top picture, she has her hand on her face.
I see. Mm-hmm.
We're doing an interview with her family. This is in a suburb of Houston. I had been sent to Houston to help the station there cover the impact of the hurricane, Hurricane Harvey. A tornado had come out of the sky, shredded their church. On Sunday morning, I was assigned to go cover their service, which they held in folding chairs. Afterwards, I talked to this family, and I noticed this little girl had her hand on her face, and she seemed very emotional. And so I asked her, I said, "What's wrong?" And she said, as she leaned into me, "I was afraid because of that tornado, my parents were going to get killed."
No.
And then she hugged me and found some kind of calm in that. But I didn't know them. I didn't know her. But that's what you end up with on a daily basis, is you're dealing with people in the best of times and in the worst of times. And in this community, where people would know me if I came out to their neighborhoods, that's one thing. In another community where people didn't know me, to have that kind of a reaction is really phenomenal. But to me, that's what we do. We, you know, if you think about it and you go back to your school days, there used to be something called the student council. Mm-hmm. And we had student council representatives, right, that we voted on.
Yes.
And well, we went to science and went to math and went to something else. They went to the student council meeting. And then at the end of the day, they came back and told us what happened. I'm a student council representative. You hear helicopters, I might be over there, and you get back to the news and you find out what it was because I went and got it for you.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do.
When you, after you sent in the postcard and you got in to the door, what became your topic of interest more? Because there are a lot of directions you could have gone in. Are you like me where I just cover whatever I want to cover? That's me.
I was a kid, and I wasn't a professional news person at that point, but I did the high school football score on Friday nights. The guy who collected that on the local radio station had a little show on an orphan's home channel in suburban Dallas in Garland. Mm-hmm. And he asked me if I would come in, bring the newspaper, read a couple of stories so he could go to the bathroom once an hour. And so, you know, so I did. And that's the first news I did. And then he ended up leaving that station and recommended me to take his place collecting the football scores and the request line. And then one thing leads to another. I went off to college, to Shreveport, Louisiana, Centenary College. The administrators there knew I had an interest in radio. I still thought I was going to be a lawyer. But they said, "Hey, if you'd like to have a little job, there's a radio station down the street and another TV station this way, and we can maybe help you get a job." And so at the radio station, it was automated, and I helped to put the automated music together. Mm-hmm. And at the TV station, I made little marks on the movies of the night where the commercials would go. It was just to make some day money. That's all it was. But I started to realize that broadcasting was becoming a big interest of mine. And so I changed and went to the University of Houston.
Oh, okay.
Where they had a communications department.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I started really getting serious about it all. So in Houston, I worked at four stations and did news. And that was in college. And then the trajectory just continued on up.
But what story led you to L.A.? I know you got to L.A. and I don't know if you got to L.A. in 2021, but I did read that you were struck by a car in 2021 while covering a story in L.A., and that had to be
Those are two different things. So I had a news director at the Fort Worth radio station, which was an all-news station, who ended up becoming a bureau chief for CNN and believed that I had the skills, even though I didn't have the TV experience. CNN was a new thing back then in 1982. And so January 2nd, 1982 was my first day on TV at CNN here in Los Angeles.
Okay.
He brought me here, even though I had no TV experience, because he thought I had the skills and he was going to help me with those skills. That started the TV career. And I ended up going local after that and have been local all those years until retirement.
Yes.
In 2021, I was out doing a story with my photographer, Joab Perez, about the end of the pandemic, or what we thought was the end of the pandemic, and businesses were trying to get back in business. And we were down on Hollywood Boulevard because El Capitan had just had his first movie in a while. Mm-hmm. And so the man I was interviewing, who was the head of a tour bus company in Hollywood, we were standing out in front of the Highland Market right by the El Capitan Theater. And all of a sudden, this car, this driver, jumps the curb at about 40 miles an hour, hits my cameraman, hits me and hits several tourists, and then went into the window of the market.
Wow.
I went to the hospital.
Who covered the story?
Story was about the end of the pandemic.
No, I mean, who covered the story about you guys getting hit?
Everybody.
That was a story in itself.
Coco McAvoy, who was one of our reporters, came down. I remember laying in the hospital bed with my news director and my general manager, watching the TV and seeing Coco crying. Crying on the air, talking about what happened to us.
Yeah.
It was very, very emotional for me.
Okay, so you mentioned, and I very, very understand that word empath, you're empathic. So empathically, how did that shift the accident? How did that shift your perception of your beliefs about doing the news or being out live? And what did it do to you?
I wouldn't say it did anything. I mean, I'll tell you what happened. No, I'll tell you what happened.
What happened?
You know, I'm lying on the ground, face down, flew in the air, which I didn't know until the cameras on top of the light standards on Hollywood Boulevard showed that.
Oh, shit.
And I landed on my face, and a whole bunch of people circled around and said, "Don't move. You might have broken bones." Mm. Now, in this incident, my first brush with humanity, people really caring about me. I don't know if they were people who lived there, people that were tourists, people that were homeless, but they circled around me and tried to keep me calm and keep me down because I'd been hit hard. My cameraman had his collarbone disconnected and fractured several ribs. Mm-hmm. I had 6 fractured ribs and a fractured tibia plateau in my knee.
Oh.
We were hurt. And it was serious, and it could have been deadly. And two women that also got involved in this came down to Hollywood for a sister's weekend to enjoy the weekend, and they ended up underneath the SUV.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That was the first thing that happened. At that point, all of my social media blew up, my emails, my text messages just exploded with people who were concerned.
Wow.
People concerned. And, you know, Supervisor Janice Hahn said, "Shame that had to happen for you to realize how much you were appreciated in this town." That's what happened. And even to this day, there are people that will come up to me and say, "How you feeling? How you doing? You okay?" Because that was only 5 years ago. It's 2021.
Yeah.
So
5 years ago.
I would say, if you're asking me about how being a sensitive or emotional person was impacted, it was whatever the criticisms are about social media, and there's plenty of room for criticism, this was one example of how people lifted me up, lifted my cameraman up. Mm-hmm. And as a result of that, I was determined to get out of the hospital. It took a month or two. I was determined to get out of the hospital, get back in front of that camera, show everybody I was going to be okay. I was of retirement age at that point, but I wasn't going to let somebody who was drunk behind the wheel of a car cause me to retire early. I was going to come back. I was going to do it on my own terms, and that's what I did.
Did you, I mean, you guys sued the person and all of that, right?
I'm sorry?
You guys had to sue the driver. The driver didn't end up killed, the dad, did he? Or she?
No, but he didn't. The lawyers that I spoke with said he really didn't have anything, and so it wasn't really worth
it.
Yeah, but you know what? Workman's Comp took care of me.
Okay.
The station had my back.
Okay.
And, you know, I got through this. Fox was great. And, you know, I am very grateful to the folks I worked with at the time. There were people in that newsroom that were crying, from what I hear. Even as late as the other day when I was on Good Day LA Plus, the ladies at the table were saying, we were all crying. We were all worried about you.
Yeah.
So there was a whole circle of love that enveloped Joab and myself. And, you know, that really gave us a boost of B12.
Mm-hmm. A boost of B12. Wow, that's what we need. Those bees. Yeah, we do. Wow, so you've gone through quite a bit. Now, I know you've done interviewed a lot of celebrities. I know you covered the O.J. Simpson. You did Michael Jackson. You've done, I think, Charlie Sheen or someone said something and it was very important. You've done a lot of things. Out of all of those stories, which story resonated with you the most, if any?
I often get asked the question of what's my favorite story and what resonates with me. And what resonates with me isn't the story. I've covered Columbine. Mm-hmm. I've covered the shootings in Las Vegas. I covered Hurricane Harvey. I've covered local drive-bys. I've covered all kinds of things.
LA riots.
Literally thousands of stories. But it's not the stories that I register as being my most favorite or my least favorite. It's the moments inside of those stories, like that little girl in the aftermath of the hurricane, praying outside of a church that was torn down by a tornado. It's the moments that stick with me. That's what resonates. And that will stay with me forever. Mm-hmm. That little girl will stay in my heart and my mind forever.
Wow. Well, that was a very touching scene. Yeah. Now, when you go out, who do you take with you? Who's your team? What is your team composed of, if you have one?
Photographer.
Just a photographer.
We'd go out in a news van. Remember, I'm retired now, but we would go out in a news van. I would be assigned a photographer for the day, and we would go on the story that we were being assigned. The photographer not only would shoot the story, he would also, or she, would edit the story. I would do all the interviews. I would write the script. I would oversee how that was all put together. And then I would articulate it live in front of the camera on the news.
Yeah, because you were on television. I keep forgetting. Because you went from radio to TV. Did you like being on camera versus being behind? Because radio... We're on camera because it's modern day, but I'm saying back in the day, you only heard people, you didn't see them. So what happened? How did that?
Radio was my first love.
Okay.
Radio was my first love. And I still have great affection for radio. I have many friends who are still on radio here in Los Angeles. And as a SAG-AFTRA board member, I represent Los Angeles radio and television broadcasters.
Oh, yeah.
So
when you say you represent, what do you mean?
I'm their representative on the union.
Oh, okay. So did they call you and talk to you directly?
Yeah.
Okay. So you're in there.
I'm very accessible.
Yeah, you're accessible. A lot of people are not accessible, you know.
I'm right there for everybody else, I'm on social media. For those in broadcast who are people that might need me because of some union situation, they know how to reach me.
Someone, let's just say someone that's a mature person. You know, I always thought, and a lot of people thought, that we would make it when we were really young. You know, I'm going to do this and that. And I've done a lot of stuff that I've never gotten credit for and people may or may not even know about, but I've done it and I have stuff to prove I've done it.
Yeah.
What would you say if someone's fortune strikes them at a mature age, where you've grown, you mature, you're whatever you have, and all of a sudden you get this big break in your career and you're well over the time that you supposed to had a career? What would you suggest people do when things like that happen?
Because things go good, I would say mazel tov. I would say congratulations, because you know what? It's not a matter of whether you're young or you're old. It's a matter of how well you do in that thing you call your lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was just having this talk with my friend that, you know, we go through careers, and I don't care if it's radio, TV, shoe salesperson, whatever it happens to be. We start off kind of like a seed.
Mm-hmm.
water the seed and you start to get a flower. And then the flower becomes kind of like a bush or a tree. And you sprout more flowers. And that's what we do, don't we? We yeah. start off with something. We don't really have all the knowledge we need. That's why you start in this business in a smaller town. And you work your way up market size to a bigger market. This is the second largest market in the United States. New York is number one. And so to get here, you don't just start here. To get here, you have to come from another market or a couple more markets and at least 5 years experience. So as you're growing up in the career, you're getting better and better and better. By the time you get some gray hair,
I love my gray hair.
I love it. You should be pretty good though.
I love my gray hair. It's flat on my head, but it's actually this big. a whole nother look from this one.
You know what I'm saying? What I'm saying is the more we do, the more we grow, the more we are successful.
Yes. Yes. But you never think that something would happen. And the thing is that people kind of give up on you along the way, like, yeah, well, you know, I always thought they would do something. And then one day you wake up, it's happened to me. That's why I'm talking to you about it. One day you wake up and think something you were dreaming of when you were in your 20s or 30s happens to you and you're way over the hill and you go, well, what am I going to do with it now? Like you, when you came out of radio, you ended up in television. You say you're retired, but my feeling is that you're not retired. You're just not out on the game board anymore. You're just, you know, doing what you want to do versus being under the thumb of someone. But it seems like you still have a love for information and for talking to people and meeting people. What would you say to someone who wants to be in journalism with fake news? And how do you know if it's not fake news? And where do you get
I told you how you know it's not fake news. Because a mainstream journalist has to get two sources for each piece of information. You have to be credible. You work to get your credibility. You work to get the trust of the people that watch you every day and every night of the week. And you don't want to lose that.
Yeah. Yes.
So you work to keep that. That's a prize. That's something that you work hard to get, like currency. And so what I would tell anybody, look, I have a camp that I started back in the year 2000, hiring news reporters and anchors. Mm-hmm. We've had people there that are older, that want to make career changes. It doesn't mean they will, but we accept people in of all ages, except when it gets to under 18, you have to have your parent with you.
Why did you start Camp News? And how do we find out more about Camp News?
Well, first of all, to find out more, you have to follow me on social media.
Yes.
That's where I put the information.
Mr. Hallizer.
We usually start, you know, putting that out there around August for the camp. This year, it'll be the second weekend of December in Malibu Canyon. This started back in the year 2000 because at that time, stations were a little jittery about letting interns go out in the field on stories with fires and shootings and all kinds of things. And, of course, there was concern about liability. You can't just write away liability because if something happens, corporations and companies have bigger pockets. And so they really started to slow down on the idea of letting these kids go out on the streets. I was president of the Associated Press Television Radio Association at the time.
Oh, I used to try to get in there.
And I told the board that I thought we could create that. We could get actors and actresses and special effects makeup artists. We could rent a place and we could create what I will only describe, and this is the only time you'll hear me say this, fake news.
Okay.
And that fake news story they would cover with the help of mentors. And then at the end of the weekend, they would end up getting a tape of their work that they could send to a small market, to a TV station. And they could say, this is what I would look like on TV. Because you can't just watch a TV station without some evidence of what you would look like. That was so popular in the first year that we decided to expand it. And we went into sort of a partnership with Pepperdine University. They have a television studio, and they were on the other end of the canyon there in Malibu Canyon. And so we started having an anchor camp. So at these two camps, we would have mentors. We had, for the reporter camp, actors, actresses, special effects, makeup artists, public information officers from the LAPD, the LA County Fire Department, and DEA, other agencies that would hold mock news conferences as part of the stories that we were creating. In the studio, they would read off of the teleprompter and create what looked like them anchoring a newscast. And this is still going on to this day. In fact, it was so popular, we doubled down on it, and we made it for both English and Spanish.
Oh, well, that's good.
Because we have such a large Spanish broadcasting here.
We do. Would you suggest that broadcasters and journalists learn other languages if they're going to be up on things, or does it matter? Is English still preferable?
I would tell you that my language skills, I'm lucky I do English as well as I do.
But you're a great reporter.
Well, thank you, but I'm not a great Spanish speaker. I'm not a great anything speaker. I'm an English speaker. And so what do? Well, there are certainly people that can help you translate, whether it's in your newsroom or whether it's out on the street. I would always find somebody that I could trust that I could help to translate for me. There are also now apps that help you translate. It's a good thing to know another language, especially here to know Spanish. But, you know, I think you first have to get the skills of being able to tell a story if you're not going to have that built-in skill of language. And that can be something you pick up along the way. Sure, of course, it would be a good thing to have. But I think the most important thing to have is a sense of being able to do things spontaneously. Because when news happens and it's breaking news, sometimes you just grab the mic and you're talking. And so that's a gift. That's a skill. That's something you really strive for. It's not the easiest thing for a lot of people to do, but that's what we do. And so would it be good to have a language? Yeah, that's not going to get you into TV. Okay. But it would help in the daily routine of gathering information.
Okay, we're getting close to time, and
we were going to go 3 or 4 hours.
Pick your brain. I'd love to keep picking your brain. You're so interesting to me. I wanted to ask you, does the adage of if it bleeds, it leads still serve, and why more people choose to do entertainment, cultural reporting than investigative reporting?
Well, I think, okay, let's try to break that down. Investigative reporting is an expensive proposition. You have research. You have to go dig up files. You have a lot of things you have to do. We used to all, every station, have investigative units. But as budgets started to get strained, one of the first things to go were the investigative units. Oh. Not because we didn't want to investigate things. It's just that with any kind of cuts, the work falls back on other people to do. So we would do some investigative. You know, we would make some calls. We would do some stuff. But, you know, that's not something that is top of mind right now. Entertainment is something we like because we live in an entertainment town, right? So that's something that's very important to us because it brings dollars into people's pockets, which end up paying their rent, their mortgage, their bills. So entertainment's important. And I think the idea of if it bleeds, it leads, that's an unfortunate description. But you start off a newscast with something you think has an impact. Not necessarily something where somebody's bleeding, but you start off with something that is powerful enough to get somebody's interest. Because a newscast is a sprint. You go from the first story to the second story to the third story to the fourth story to the fifth story, all the way around the clock. And if you lose people along the way, that's not going to help the ratings you need in order to get the commercials you need. And you're not paying for the broadcasting that you're watching on the local channels. That's based on commercials. Mm-hmm. And that's based on ratings.
Wow. You are an amazing man. I was telling everyone, haven't you heard of Hal Eisner? Like, he's like the Michael Jackson of the news world.
Although he sang a lot better than I do. Again, remember, in the shower, the water drops go the other way.
I know. I love that analogy. I've never heard that before. So we're getting ready to close out. I want you to, again, give us your social media. I believe you said it's Hal Eisner all across the board, but tell us anyway, again.
Well, it's Hal Eisner on all the social media, except for Facebook, where I have what they call a fan page, which is Hal Eisner Journalist.
Okay.
And we will have up on Hal Eisner Journalist and my Instagram page last night's book signing event.
Okay, good.
People would like to see that. And let's not forget that this book that we were signing last night is available on all the online sites like Amazon, yes. BarnesandNoble.com, BooksAMillion.com, all those sort of things. And, you know, it's out there. And I would love people and encourage them to take a look at this. It's an interesting story about my career and all the way back to my childhood.
What's the cost of it?
It's really not very expensive. It's $15.99 for the
paper. That's a good price. That's a good price.
If you do digital, it's $7.99.
Okay, that's a good price. So we know about the book. We know about an accidental career. My 58 years as a broadcasting.
Can I give you one more quick thought? Do we have enough time?
Absolutely.
Accidental is not used in the manner of cars hitting each other. Accidental is used as a metaphor for things happen inadvertently in our lives.
Out of our
things
control.
Happen that we don't expect. And I would venture to say in your life, in everybody's life, there are things that happen that cause you to turn left or turn right. When you turn left, you meet this person who's significant in your life. But if you turn right, you meet this person who's significant in your life. So accidents happen to all of us. They always happen. I would say in many cases, if you really self-explore, you'll find that there were many accidents in real life that led you to a lot of different things that are really important to you.
I don't even have to explore. I'm here to tell you verbatim, face in front. I know I've had a lot of accidents happen, and they've all led me in all these different things to get me here.
But they're happy accidents.
They are. They are. And I took the way it was written, because your rep did such a great job at writing. I took it to mean that it was something that was unexpected, something that twist and turn that led you into where you are now. So I took it as such. Okay, so we want to thank you profusely again. I would love to talk to you more. So please, if you're accessible, I'd love to have it. And
Absolutely.
Then also, just so everybody knows, we would love to thank every week, you guys. We have the owner of LA Talk Radio working very hard to bring these live shows to you, to keep the stream live, to keep it comfortable, to have great guests like Hal Eisner. I was like lusting after talking to this guy for what he knows. That's so important to me to talk to people that are intelligent, they're empathic, they understand human beings and the life of living every day. So that's really exciting. So I want to thank Sam Hassan, LA Talk Radio, for letting me bring the shine to the show every week. Shout out to you guys out there. You know, I love you. I love you for who you are. You stand for yourselves. You're real. You're a luminary. You light up my life. I look forward to coming every week and talking to you and talking to the guests. And then also, I like you for being able to push forward every day. Look at yourself straight on in the mirror and say, I love you, no matter how crazy you are, what your flaws are and your faults. You love yourself anyway, despite all of what the world may think about you. And then also, don't forget me, social media, IG. You can Google my name. I'm everywhere. Snapchat, everywhere. Okay, I'm probably even somewhere over the Himalayas, an image of me somewhere. I'm literally all over the world. So don't forget Osiris_Munir_thepainter on IG, and everything else is Osiris Munir, but just Google my name. And what else do we want to say? We want to thank you again. Anything else you want to say before we go?
I enjoy these opportunities to have a conversation. I'd be more than happy to come back anytime.
I would love to have you back. I love the news. That's why I'm still doing it, because I love to have that. Also, listen up. Understand that without you, your likes, your shares, your support, we are not able to come on and bring you these shows. These things are not free. We don't just go around just like, oh, yeah, we want to have a podcast. We want to do this and that. These things are costly. Some people pay for them. Some people don't. It all depends, but they all are expensive, and we want to present in the best way we can. So we need your support, your numbers, your likes, your shares, comments, whatever you want to say. But we like to have good things for you to say. So that's our show for today. We want to thank our guest again, Mr. Hal Eisner. Don't forget to pick up a copy of An Accidental Career, my 58-year adventure of being a broadcast news reporter by my very own and our very own Mr. Hal Eisner. I listened to you so many times. I'm like, is that the same Hal Eisner? Like, wow. So don't forget, we'd love to have you back. And thank you again for coming.
That'd be delightful.
Okay. We'll see you soon. We'll see you next week, people. Bye-bye, my looms. Mwah. Bye.
You're listening to The Osiris Mounir Show, only on LA Talk Radio.